All right, now the prayer is done. We're kicking this thing off with lesson five. It's called The Divorce of David's Kingdom. And I picked the word divorce very intentionally because one of these great resources that I always recommend to you has a great perspective on this. I've got the quote here down below, but more than a split of David's kingdom, it's a divorce. And there's huge typological reasons why that's the case. I want to develop that theme a lot for you. So we're looking at chapters 12 through 16. Last lesson was all about Solomon's fall from grace, his threefold fall. It's much more than just his wives and the idolatry. It is a threefold fall where he royally falls. He gives in with his royal appetites into the threefold concupiscence. We talked about all of that, and we talked about the punishment that God gave him through the prophet Ahijah, where his kingdom is going to be torn apart and given to another, to Jeroboam. So let's pick up right where we left off then. We're in chapter 12. The time is 930 BC, so roughly 1,000 years before the public ministry of Christ. Keep that in mind. There's a lot to say. This is totally random, but there's a lot to say about the number 1,000 years, especially you get to the book of Revelation. And 1,000 years is really, really important. But we're talking right now about 1,000 years before the ministry of Christ, when the kingdom splits, and then when Jesus is going to heal that. So without any further ado, let's look at chapter 12, verse 1 and following. It says, Rehoboam, so this again is Solomon's son. It's always confusing, all these names. It'd be so much easier if it was like James and Bill and Nick, or you know, all these names we're familiar with. But of course they're not, and they sound very similar. And as we go through this, I have a chart for you. Some kings in the north and the south have the same name. It's just, you have to really pay attention to this. But it's Jeroboam in the north, Rehoboam in the south. So Rehoboam is Solomon's son. So Rehoboam went to Shechem, for all Israel had come to Shechem to make him king. When Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, heard it, for he was still in Egypt, whether he had fled from King Solomon, then Jeroboam returned from Egypt, and they sent and called him. And Jeroboam and all the assembly of Israel came and said to Rehoboam, your father made our yoke heavy. Now therefore lighten the hard service of your father and his heavy yoke upon us, and we will serve you. And he said, give me 3 days and I'll get back to you. Okay, so we'll just stop right there really quickly. And this is a really interesting moment here in salvation history where the elders of all of Israel, all the various tribes, gather together in Shechem to say, look, your father made life extremely difficult. And I've been sharing with you over the past couple of lessons when we talked about Solomon, there's all these speed bumps, red flags, warning signs, whatever you want to call them, about how he was tending towards being a king like all the other nations. And we talked about all that with Saul back in 1 and 2 Samuel. But he ended his life basically a tyrant. Now, there's a tradition that he converted. I don't have a dog in that fight. I mean, I would like to think that he converted at the end of his life. King Solomon, I would like to think, is in heaven. There's a tradition of his conversion. But towards the end of his reign, it's bad. It was really, really bad. He taxed the people heavily. He had forced labor, as I shared with you, in the construction, not just of the temple, remember, but he built his own palace and the palace for the Egyptian princess and all of his other projects. So heavy, heavy taxation, forced labor. Think of him basically as kind of a Pharaoh figure. And that's actually really important because we're going to see, starting in this lesson, moving forward into the other five lessons of this course, you're going to have all kinds of Exodus echoes, Exodus reversals, Exodus allusions, direct and indirect. They're all over the place. And that's really the way to understand this next segment of salvation history, which is a reset button for the Exodus. And so Solomon here is like a Pharaoh figure, as a tyrant with his taxes, with his forced labor, and that's no good. Now, all this happens where the elders go up to Rehoboam and say, okay, your father was a tyrant, basically, and now you need to lighten the yoke, you need to lighten the load here, and we'll serve you. And this all happens in Shechem. And Shechem is so interesting for a number of reasons. You go back, you can check out your Catholic Bible dictionary to see all the various things that happen at Shechem. It's where Abraham built his altar when he arrived in the promised land after God called him to travel there. Jacob bought land there. But they're also very significantly, this is where in Shechem, the Deuteronomic covenant was ratified under the leadership of Joshua. Moses said before he died, when you get into the land, ratify the covenant, you're going to go to Shechem in between these two mountains, Gerizim and Ebal. This is where it was ratified. And so Shechem is a really beautiful, historical, significant place of the patriarchs worshiping there and the Deuteronomic covenant being ratified there. The people would become, renew their commitment and their love of God. Now, unfortunately, the irony is because of Solomon's sin, as well as Rehoboam's stupidity. Clearly, wisdom is not an inherited trait. Rehoboam is an utter idiot. Because of sin now, the people are going to be split. They were united as one people under God with the Deuteronomic covenant here at Shechem and in that same place. Now they're going to be split, and it's going to get even uglier when Jeroboam becomes the new king. We're going to go through all of that and his apostasy here really, really soon. So Shechem's a significant place. And this all happens there. Now, in terms of the response, Rehoboam says, give me 3 days and come back again. In the meantime, let's go read on in verse 6 here. Rehoboam took counsel with the old men who had stood before Solomon his father while he was yet alive, saying, how do you, note that right there, you can circle that in your Bible. He says, how do y'all advise me to answer this people? And they said very, very wisely, they've been around the block a few times. They saw how Solomon's, the final years of his reign was pretty ugly and people were oppressed and they weren't loving it at all. And so they wisely said, look, be a servant to them. If you're a servant to these people today and you serve them and speak good words to them when you answer them, then they will be your servants forever. So in other words, yes, lighten the yoke, repair this relationship that has been under strain under Solomon for all this time. But in verse 8, he forsook the counsel of the old men gave him, and took counsel with the young men who had grown up with him. So his frat buddies, right? His boyhood friends, the boys that he wants to impress and give favors to, and they all think that they are friends with the king and they're going to have all these favors. You could just imagine, you know, what they want out of this. Okay, you could just imagine this. But the boys that grew up with him stood before him and said, he said to them, what do you advise that we answer the people? Now note that. So he already has his mind made up. That's my point. He says to the old men, hey, what do you guys say? As if it's pro forma, as if it's just what he needs to do so that way he doesn't burn any bridges or, I don't know, give the wrong impression. He kind of feels obligated, I think, to go to the old men and says, okay, give me your advice. I don't really care, but give me your advice. I'm not going to listen to it, because he already says to the young men, his buddies, hey, what should we say to these elders, right? As if that's what he planned all along. So his buddies, all bravado and just kind of, I don't know, peacocks, I guess you could say, they say, thus you shall speak to this people who said to you, your father made a yoke heavy. Please lighten it for us. Thus you shall say, my little finger is thicker than my father's loins. And now, whereas my father laid upon you a heavy yoke, I will add to your yoke. My father chastised you with whips, but I will chastise you with scorpions. So sure enough, that's exactly what he does. This is very ugly language. It's violent, abusive language. He's already made up his mind. Yes, there is sexual innuendo there. I'm going to read a great quote from your Catholic Introduction to the Old Testament here in a second. But this is absolutely stupid for him. Like, he has no idea what he's doing. He's not wise at all. He should have listened to the old men. And now he's going to certainly make things worse. So consequently, these 10 tribes, except for Benjamin, and I'll explain why Benjamin. I have a lot of personal thoughts as to why Benjamin stayed loyal to Judah. I will talk about that later on down in the lesson here. But sure enough, these 10 tribes rebel against Rehoboam, and they make Jeroboam as king. And they say here, we're going to skip all the way down to verse 16, when all of Israel saw the king did not listen to them, the people answered the king, what portion have we in David? We have no inheritance in the son of Jesse. To your tents, O Israel, look to your own house, David. Okay, so very interesting stuff here. Now, these words in response to Rehoboam, we've already read them before. If you go all the way back to 2 Samuel chapter 20, you might remember the story where David is coming back to Jerusalem. The whole rebellion with his son Absalom was squashed, and so he's coming back to the city, and there's a lot of tension with this character named Sheba. Okay, and so Sheba says the same thing, almost verbatim. You go back and check out the verse, 2 Samuel chapter 20, verse 1. He leads a very short-lived rebellion of the Israelite tribes against Judah and against the house of David. It's squashed really, really quickly, but that's a foreshadowing of this longer, well, actually, it's a permanent split up until the time of Christ anyways. It's a permanent split of Israel from the Davidic king, right? So there's like seeds were sown back in David's time that had taken root and was never really eradicated, right? So I think that's what we're seeing here, is this rotten fruit of the tensions between Israel and Judah now really taking place. All right, so this whole exchange here is more than just a split. you know, I think it's very evident. Okay, they separate, and it's very political, and they don't want to be taxed anymore. They don't want to be have forced labor, and they just want to be able to breathe, right? But your Catholic introduction to the Old Testament has a, it's a slightly longish quote, but it's really, really good of how we're truly supposed to see the split. And I want to develop it a little bit more for it with you, okay? All right, so it says, the account of Israel's rejection of Rehoboam has the force of a divorce between the bride of Israel and the Davidic king, her husband. Recall that David assumed the kingship over the over northern Israel on the basis of a covenant that that employed language of bone and flesh, echoing the covenant between Adam and Eve. So if you remember that, when David becomes king, he says, you know, we're your bone, we're your flesh. That's covenantal language, right? It's a family bond that echoes Adam and Eve. So David is the royal bridegroom, the royal husband, and Israel is the bride. And it goes on. Let's see here. Moreover, later in the narrative, all the people of Israel are compared to a bride who comes home to her husband in relation to the Davidic king. That's 2 Samuel 17:3. So in keeping with this imagery of the bridegroom king and the bridal people, Rehoboam's adolescent advisors urge him to make a crudely chauvinistic boast. My little finger is thicker than my father's loins, an only lightly disguised sexual euphemism. Rehoboam appears in the posture of the swaggering, abusive husband king. Bride Israel departs to her own familial home, end quote. And I think that's so important to keep in mind here. So yes, this is true. Rehoboam is showing off. If you understand the metaphorical, but I think very real relationship that the king is supposed to protect his bride, the people, protect her, care for her, nourish her, all of these things. That's how he's supposed to treat her. But Solomon is not doing that towards the end of his life. And Rehoboam is saying, I'm going to make it worse. So, you know, and again, he says this, you know, crude language here. I consider it like locker room talk. You know what I mean? It's my little finger is thicker than my father's loins. You know, I don't have to spell that out for you. I think you can clearly see what he's referring to here. But remember how many wives Solomon had, right? He had the 700 wives and 300 porcupines or whatever it was, the concubines or whatever it is, the reverse. I always get them mixed up. But 1,000 women, it's like, wow, my father had all of these. Women, I mean, that's nothing, he says. That's nothing. And I'm going to chase. Now, luckily, I do have to point this out. With his abusive sexual language, this violent language of this sexual boast here, if you read the text, he actually doesn't repeat that to the elder. So maybe he had a little bit of wisdom to know, that's one step too far. That's crossing the line. But the line, the response about the whips and chastising them with scorpions, that he does say. And so various commentators will point out that probably the scorpions, they may refer to pieces of bone or metal that is woven into whips so that way it catches a person's flesh and tears it off. That might be what's going on there. But certainly he's saying very violently, very sexual innuendo, I'm going to make things so much worse. And what happens if a husband abuses his wife and the wife says, look, you know, we got to change, we got to go to therapy, or you need some whatever, you need help. And he says, no, I'm going to make it worse. Well, she's going to pack up and go. And that's exactly what Israel does. She packs it up and packs her bags and she leaves because Rehoboam refuses to be the husband, the royal husband to her that God has called her to be. All right. Now that is really, really important. And what I want to develop here is that this changes with Jesus. Now I'm going to share with you Matthew chapter 11. Okay, Matthew chapter 11 is one of my favorite, at the end, the very last verses of Matthew chapter 11, I'll flip here. I'm going to read the whole little section here for you. It's really chapter 11, verses 28 through 30. It's one of my favorite verses. It's one of my favorite verses, especially, I mean, even in high school when I first started reading scripture and studying it as a Protestant, it's always one of my favorite passages. But now as an adult, you know, all the responsibilities of life and kids and raising them, it means even more to me. But this has always been beautiful. Check this out. Matthew 11, verse 28, come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Now, that's a beautiful verse. Come to Jesus, rest with him. And the whole, I don't want to do another whole Bible study and burn up too much time on that passage, but when he's talking about rest, he's talking about Sabbath rest, covenantal rest. He's going to restore our souls as a new creation and give us that Sabbath covenantal rest that we were created for, right? So that's all very beautiful to turn to Christ. But what's so interesting is that guaranteed, and a lot of commentators point this out, guaranteed Jesus has Rehoboam's story in mind. So Rehoboam is an abusive royal bridegroom, right? He's violent and he's threatening. Jesus comes and reverses that. So he says, I will lighten the yoke. I will lighten the load. So come to Jesus. He is the new bridegroom. He's the new son of David. He's both king and he is God, right? He's human and he's divine. He is gentle, right? Rehoboam is abusive. Jesus comes across as gentle and loving and meek, and he will restore the relationship with his people that Rehoboam broke. And that's what makes this so much more interesting and so much more beautiful. Jesus is restoring the marriage between him and his people, all right? So because he is the royal bridegroom, and there's so much to say, so much has been written about Jesus as the divine bridegroom. Brant Petrie has a fantastic book on this. There's just a lot out there. Jesus is the divine bridegroom who comes to redeem and die for his people and bring her to himself. That's the church, that's the new Israel. But this language here in Matthew about his yoke being light and taking his, he takes our burdens, that's all him restoring the relationship with Israel. And I geek out about that. That is really, really beautiful, okay? So that's what we need to understand this split. From now on, we need to understand the split of the kingdom as a divorce that lasts for 1,000 years until Jesus comes in the Paschal Mysteries and he reverses it. And then it's going to be the ministry and the mission of the church, the Great Commission, to go out and to call all nations and all descendants of the 12 tribes who have intermarried with all these Gentile nations to come back into his one kingdom. So 1,000-year divorce, think about that, 1,000-year divorce that is finally reversed with Jesus Christ, all right? So this is all a political divorce also. The religious divorce is coming right on the heels here, okay? So it's kind of split. There's kind of political, secular divorce going on, but Rehoboam's apostasy is going to bring about the religious divorce from God, all right? So beautiful stuff. Keep that in mind. The end of chapter 12, really briefly here, the prophet Shemaiah tells Rehoboam, hey, this is from God. You need to relax. Don't go up and fight against Jeroboam and fight against the northern kingdom. It's not going to go so well for you. And amazingly, he actually obeys. Okay. So then that brings us here the second half of chapter 12, which is Jeroboam's horrific apostasy. So this is the true religious divorce that's going to take place. And this is really what Jesus will restore all the tribes to himself in the one kingdom, his church, true. But even more than that, he's going to restore and heal the religious separation that comes about from Jeroboam. So let's take a look at his apostasy. And boy, oh boy, I cannot overstate how bad it is. So let's check this out. Hey, this is Dr. Nick. Thank you so much for listening to this course sample. If you enjoyed it and want to listen to the entire lesson, please become a student over at scriptureandtradition.com where you can listen to this entire course, but also all the other courses that we have available in the S&T audio library where you can listen to them on demand, however and whenever you want. So thank you so much. God bless you and keep studying your Bible.